Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Honecke. Our guests this week are Dan Glickman and Mike Johans, two former secretaries of agriculture who join us to talk about the election results and the future of the farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Donald Trump has been elected as the 47th president of the United States. Trump defeated Vice President Kamala Harris and performed well when it came to rural voters. Republicans have also gained control of the Senate. His victory has significant implications for many issues that would impact agriculture, including possible across-the-board tariffs, deportations of illegal immigrants, and rolling back some of the Biden administration's regulatory actions at EPA and other agencies. President-elect Trump becomes the second president to serve non-consecutive presidential terms. Farmers are more optimistic about the long-term economic outlook, but still worried about 2025, according to the latest Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group. The overall index rose by 27 points, and one of the biggest reasons for change was more producers feeling confident about the future. Roughly 53% of farmers expect the farm economy to be bad next year, which is still a 20-point drop from the previous month. 23% of those surveyed said they think their own financial situation will be worse over the next year, and 33% expect the economy to be bad for the next 5 years. Veterinarians are asking USDA to move quickly in testing milk nationwide to try and get the most recent avian flu outbreak controlled. The department announced last week it would start the tests, but it's not clear when or how they will be carried out. Nearly 450 cases have been found in dairy cattle in 15 states since the outbreak began in March. Circling back to the election, Dan Glickman served as Secretary of Agriculture under the Clinton administration. We asked him what the future of agriculture would look like under a Trump administration.
Agriculture policy is, to the extent the government's involved with it, tends to be more congressional than most policy items. So the members of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees will have great influence on agriculture policy. And generally speaking, if you look back historically, it hasn't mattered that much from an implementation point of view, whether it's a Democratic or Republican administration. Both know that these programs have to be administered fairly and professionally. And if they're not, they'll go scream to the members of Congress, and the members of Congress will then scream to the administration.
Let's talk about that rural vote, because we saw that Trump really increased his already large margins with those voters in this last election. What do Democrats need to do to regain the trust of those rural voters?
You know, this is a perennial problem. And I was a member of Congress in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And I was on the Ag Committee, and then I became Secretary of Agriculture. And I always had good relationships with rural and small town voters. I got good margins in my own elections with rural and small town voters because I really did my best to work with them and try to help them the best as I can. And now you look at vast areas of rural America, there are just no Democratic representatives in Congress, or very few. And I think a lot of it doesn't have to do with ag programs. It has to, I think, to do with cultural issues. It has to do with perhaps guns, other cultural issues, maybe abortion. A lot of the folks in rural America think that the Democratic Party is too elitist, too coastal. But this election showed that this is powerful vote for Republicans in rural America is something that Democrats just still haven't come to grips with how to deal with.
And I do kind of want to follow up on that. Do you think the Democratic Party has gone too far left for those working class Americans?
I think perhaps some have, or at least the impression that some have. And I don't think it's a question of farm policy. Maybe with some exceptions on the environmental side, there's always the worry that maybe environmentalists have too much control of the agriculture programming. But no, I think it's called the cultural issues have as much to do with it as anything else. And a lot of times Democratic candidates for president don't spend a lot of time in farm country. But it's an interesting phenomenon because I watched this last election and I'm not sure that the Donald Trump as a human being had that much of a connection with rural voters. I mean, he's from New York City. I don't think he spent much time in his life on a farm or done anything like that. But still, the Republican Party did extraordinarily well in farm country. I mean, surprisingly well in farm country. Surprised me, to be honest with you. And I just think that Democrats need to sit down and realize that they just can't give up on rural America.
We'll be back with more from Dan Glickman right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Trump has doubled down, calling for across-the-board tariffs on imports, especially on China. We asked former Ag Secretary Glickman if farmers should be concerned this could lead to a new trade war.
They should be very concerned about it. President-elect Trump has talked about 60% tariffs on imports from China, and then a 10 or a 20% import tariff on everything else. And agriculture is probably the most export-sensitive of any industry in America. We have to sell about half of our farm products overseas because if we don't, they just will rot. We don't have consumer involvement and appetite for farm products. About half of it is domestic and about half of it is overseas. And so it's a very bad idea to just have blanket tariffs. I'm not saying that at times you don't go after a country that engages in improper behavior or overly subsidizes themselves. But we've lost a lot of the markets in China already to Brazil. And part of it has been because of our trade policy. So I hope that farm groups, agriculture businesses recognize that they just can't keep quiet about this. This is a really important part of the future of agriculture, productivity, and health, is to have what I call fair and free markets. And you can't put a 60% tariff on everything that China sells or buys from us. It's a prescription for very serious economic damage to farmers.
We know Congress still has a lot to do before the end of the year, including the expired farm bill. At the same time, there's pressure from some farmers for some kind of payments to offset the downturn in commodity prices. What do you think lawmakers are going to get done during this lame duck session?
You know, I doubt they're going to get an actual full farm bill through. It's, you know, there's a lot of provisions, conservation, export provisions, the commodity titles, the feeding titles for the hungry, all sorts of things. My guess, they'll do an extension, but it will probably be accompanied with or associated with some sort of special assistance, disaster assistance for the hurricanes, for the flood damage, and perhaps for the commodity price decline that we've seen. So I don't think they're going to leave for the year without doing something in the agriculture area. I just doubt they're going to do a full-scale farm bill before next year.
How do you think the outcome of this election is going to change the shape of that farm bill whenever it's passed?
I think the farm bill is largely going to be governed by what Congress says rather than what the administration says. I mean, President Trump, no matter whether you like him or don't like him, does not have a lot of experience in agriculture. I think that historically, the USDA has been the Congress department, more than the Defense Department is or the Health and Human Services Department. So I'm not sure there's going to be a material change. But on the other hand, if you engage in big tariffs, that's going to hurt farmers regardless of what the farm bill looks like. And then they're talking about deporting all illegal immigrants into this country. Well, agriculture is so dependent upon immigrant labor, particularly fresh produce agriculture, but dairy is also and others as well. So if we have a program where we have a farm bill over here, but then we have massive tariffs and then we deport everybody who's here illegally, That's not going to help agriculture at all. So this requires good sense, good judgment, and hopefully the president-elect will appoint somebody, the Secretary of Agriculture, who understands the economics of agriculture and that it just can't be treated like it's any other commodity.
Mr. Glickman, thank you so much for joining us this
week. You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll be right back to speak with Bush administration Ag Secretary Mike Johanns. But first, Lydia Johnson has more on what a GOP-controlled Senate could mean for agriculture in this week's Map It Out.
Republicans won control of both the White House and Senate on Election Day. The GOP majority will make it easier to confirm Trump's nominees, including cabinet secretaries and judges, and even Supreme Court nominees if he gets the chance to name them. Although some House races are still being counted, a White House, Senate, and House Republican trifecta could allow smoother passage of many packages of legislation. A renewal of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2025 and major spending cuts could be passed with just a simple majority vote through the budget reconciliation process. The potential for a Republican trifecta could be enough incentive for lawmakers to push off farm bill negotiations until the next Congress, when Arkansas Republican John Bozeman will take over as chair of the Senate Ag Committee. Two Senate Democrats of note lost their reelection races. In Montana, three-term Democratic Senator John Tester lost to former Navy SEAL Tim Sheehy. The pair collectively spent more than $100 million during the campaign. In Ohio, a senior Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee, Ohio's Sherrod Brown, was defeated by Republican Bernie Moreno. Texas Republican Ted Cruz and Nebraska Republican Deb Fischer both won their toss-up races. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver with a 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to navigate taxes, trade, and technology as we dive into what's ahead for food and agriculture. The summit takes place on Monday, March 17th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Welcome back. Mike Johanns served as Secretary of Agriculture under the Bush administration. We asked him what farmers can expect from a Trump administration and if there's going to be any differences from the first time Trump was in office.
You know, I look at the election and there's just no question about it. He does extremely well in the rural areas of the entire United States. So small towns, farms, ranches are close to his heart. So I think he'll remember that. I think that's just the nature of getting yourself elected to any office, much less the presidency. So I think he's going to try to do everything he can to be helpful to America's rural areas, to America's farmers and ranchers. So what does that mean? It could mean a whole host of things. It could mean, let's get a farm bill done, better tax policy. Let's extend the Trump tax cuts from 10 years ago. He's never been a fan of high interest rates, to say the least. So he doesn't set interest rates, but a president can have impact there. So that would be positive. He's talking about some trade issues that I must admit concern farmers and ranchers. They concern me. So I'm hoping that's a negotiating point and we can get beyond that because we just desperately need markets for our ag products. There's just no doubt about it.
I do want to piggyback off of some of those concerns you mentioned. You know, he has called for those across the board tariffs, particularly on China. Do you think farmers need to be worried about another possible trade war that could come out of that?
Well, we all want a more balanced trade policy. There's no doubt about the fact that that trade policy has become unbalanced in some areas. He points to China. I could point to some other areas, too. Cross-the-board tariffs generally are not good for agriculture because when we put tariffs on things, there's going to be retaliation. I just don't think there's much doubt about that. So what does that mean? Well, typically what it means is that whoever you've imposed tariffs on, they're going to come back and retaliate against agriculture. They'll quit buying agricultural products from the United States. We've seen some of that with China and soybeans. I worry that there'll be more of that. And, you know, that's a punishing impact. If we can't sell our products, prices are going to go down. We produce more than we can consume in the United States in many areas. So that's a very worrisome thing when he talks about tariffs. My hope is that he's negotiating. My hope is that he's basically saying to China and to other countries, look, you've got to step up. You've got to treat my people fairly. And we can move through that part of his agenda quickly because it does have a real downside for agriculture.
Another thing that Trump has mentioned is the mass deportation of illegal immigrants. How do you think that's going to impact farms across the country?
Well, farms need labor. I mean, talk to any dairy producer out there and they're going to say, look, my number one item is I can't find labor. You go to high value crops, specialty crops, they're going to tell you the same thing. They're going to say, I can't find the labor to harvest my crops. So farmers, ranchers, agriculture in general, agribusiness have been agitating for years and years to get immigration policy that allows workers to come here legally and do the work that agriculture demands. So when he talks about mass deportations, again, concerns arise. Now, having said that, I'll just be very candid about this issue. We need immigration policy that makes sense, that is not an open border, that in effect closes that border to illegal entry. So Trump is right on this issue. People support that. I'm hopeful that he can do it in a way that still allows legal entry to do work in the United States.
We'll be right back with more from Mike Johanns right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says he's been promised a role in the Trump administration. We asked former Ag Secretary Mike Johanns if farmers should be worried about Kennedy, given how he's attacked the ag sector and food industry.
Yeah, Robert F. Kennedy's rhetoric has not been kind toward agriculture in today's world. Let's, again, just be very, very straightforward about that. When the name Robert F. Kennedy comes up, agriculture gets panicky. Now, what I've been reading the last 24 to 48 hours is that Kennedy's role will be more focused on health, FDA, that sort of thing. So I think if Donald Trump brought him into agriculture and put him in the middle of it, I think farmers and ranchers, agribusiness in general would panic. And I just don't see President-elect Trump doing that.
And the Biden administration has poured a lot of money into helping farmers implement climate smart practices that could potentially provide new markets for farmers. What do you think happens now with those initiatives?
Trump has not been a big fan of the climate smart initiatives, if you will. He's made that very clear on the campaign trail. Now, having said that, I don't have any doubt that the president-elect knows the importance of things like ethanol and biodiesel and the huge impact that that has had on agriculture and the huge impact that that could have on agriculture in the future. You know, if I were to offer any advice, and I think the president-elect knows this too, farmers don't want to farm for money that they get from the federal government. They want to farm in the marketplace. They want to have markets for their products. One way of boosting that marketplace is through things like biodiesel, things like ethanol. So my hope is that he will have an aggressive policy that really builds those markets. We need that in agriculture. So that's my hope. And he can do some very, very positive things here that not only are good for climate issues, but also just enormously positive for agriculture in the United States.
I would like to wrap with a question on the farm bill for you. You know, Congress doesn't have a lot of time left to pass a bill before the end of the year. When do you think a bill is going to get passed? And do the results of this election complicate things at all? How do you think that the election results are going to shape that next farm bill?
You know, I've been saying for a couple of years, the only way to get a farm bill done is to have a bipartisan farm bill. Keep in mind, even if Republicans end up with the House, they're going to end up with the Senate. They're going to have President-elect Trump in the White House for the next 4 years. But keep in mind, you still have to get 60 votes in the Senate. I don't see any way around that. So I don't see a farm bill happening this year. I would give that a 1% chance. It's just not going to happen. I do see a disaster relief package. I do think there'll be some assistance for agriculture in that. I think Senator Bozeman, soon to be Chairman Bozeman, has already signaled that. So hopefully that can get done in the lame duck session. Then after the first of the year, it's, you know, Chairman Thompson and Chairman Bozeman need to sit down and talk about the strategy to get the farm bill to the finish line. It's a big bill. It's over $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Those numbers get people's attention. That tells me you're not going to get every Republican vote for this, even if then President Trump wants to get it done. But at the end of the day, we do need to get a farm bill done. I think you're going to see another year extension. But having said that, in 2025, I'm optimistic that we'll see a farm bill get to the finish line.
Mr. Joe Hanns, thank you so much for joining us this morning, sir.
It's always a pleasure.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson has more on genetically modified seed adoption in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Genetically modified seeds were first commercially introduced to U.S. farmers in 1996, and usage has since been on the rise. Many traits have been developed, including virus, fungus, and drought resistance, as well as traits with enhanced protein, oil, or vitamin content. However, the most popular trait types are herbicide tolerance and insect resistance. Seeds can have one or combinations of traits. As you can see on this chart, by 2008, more than 50% of corn, cotton, and soybean acres were planted with genetically engineered seeds using at least one trait. Now in 2024, more than 90% of those three crops use genetically engineered seeds, according to data from the USDA Economic Research Service. Although not shown on this chart, genetically engineered traits are also commonly used in alfalfa, canola, and sugar beet seeds. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Achieving excellence isn't easy. It's reserved for those willing to work for it. Farmers like you, who strive for bigger yields and better education. People who settle for nothing less than the very best, because you know excellence can only be achieved through hard work, commitment, and perseverance. Take your operation to new heights and join us for the 2025 Commodity Classic, Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Monday is Veterans Day, a federal holiday. Following the holiday, Congress returns to Washington on Tuesday for the start of the lame duck session. The next Consumer Price Index is released Wednesday. And we'll bring you next week's episode from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual meeting in Kansas City. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.